This WBEZ podcast is supported by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in up to 40 currencies with only a few simple taps. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. Terms and conditions apply. Be smart. Get Wise. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration blends classroom learning with extensive field education, guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. Inspire change. Shape the future.
Hey Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Before we get to our conversation about an antique car traveling across the country in the name of equal rights, I want to remind you that you can hear a rundown of the latest stories happening here in the Chicago area at the very end of this podcast. Now let's turn to the conversation you clicked on. And back to that vintage car that I mentioned. It's a bright yellow 1914 Saxon motor car nicknamed the Golden Flyer 2. And the vehicle rolled through Chicago this week as part of a nearly 11,000-mile tour across 25 states, calling for voting rights protections and recognition of the Equal Rights Amendment. Now, the ERA passed Congress decades ago, but it's still not part of the Constitution. So what's the holdup, and what role has Illinois played in that fight? In this episode of the pod, we'll discuss that history, and we'll hear why supporters say the battle over the ERA is deeply connected to today's ongoing fights for voting rights. At the table with me was the Reverend Dr. Jeanette Wilson, who's the National Director of Push for Excellence, Laura Welch, who's a National Organization for Women National Board Member and past President of Illinois Now, and Maureen Helwig, who's President Emeritus of the Chicago Women's History Center. Now, I had Maureen dive a little deeper to kick things off. Here she is with more on what the Equal Rights Amendment is and what it was designed to do.
Well, ironically, though, we had the suffragists fought for our right to vote much earlier. By the 1970s, we still had not approved of an amendment to the Constitution, which is, I think women felt, was the most powerful place to place our rights to vote and all other kinds of rights. And so in 1972, Congress passed the Equal Rights Amendment, but then it required ratification by 38 states. That was 3/4 of the states. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, that process has been going on since then. And technically, the last state, Virginia, ratified this amendment in 2020, but it still hasn't been certified by the National Archivist, you know, all these process steps that things have to go through. Mm-hmm. And in spite of the fact that President Biden declared, while he was in office, that the Equal Rights Amendment is the law of the land,
right?
It's still not penciled into the actual Constitution document. It has been in a few places or a few cases where people went ahead and did it, but technically yet, we are still in the process. And even Illinois didn't really ratify until 2018.
Yes.
So for a blue state, I don't know where we were sleeping switch there.
Yeah.
But part of the role of the Chicago Women's History Center is to document all these stories, all the efforts by so many women to tell and preserve the story of women fighting for their rights and for the rights of so many other people here in this country.
Well, Reverend Wilson, let's go back to that yellow car I mentioned there and talk to us about the Driving the Vote for Equality tour and the events of this week.
Well, we hosted the Driving the Vote yellow car yesterday at Rainbow Push, and it was really kind of historic, and yet it seemed very challenging because here we are in 2016 and women still don't have equal rights. 2026, I'm sorry. We still don't have equal rights. We're still fighting the same fights. And as we look at the landscape, you know, I've thought about Ida B. Wells. She was one of the African-American women fighting for women's rights and women's right to vote. Even when the suffragettes were demanding the right to vote, it did not include African-American women.
Mm-hmm.
And now here we are, 2026, and I thought about the car traveling all around the country.
And for people who aren't making the connection in their minds yet, tell us about where the original idea of touring with this vehicle comes from. What's the connection?
Well, I think the connection is you had two women who said, we have to fight for this right, and we have to alert the people around the country. They didn't have social media. They didn't have the internet. And they didn't even have broadband radio and television. So they decided to get in this little car, two-seater, two women, driving across the country, hitting every state, saying women deserve and have earned the right to vote. And I think it was an amazing challenge for them because the car could only go 30 miles an hour, which was fast back in the day.
Right.
But can you imagine crossing from the East Coast to the West Coast, north to south, in this little car?
I can't imagine it. I mean, it was an incredible feat.
No, but I just think it talks about the strength of women, the focus of women, the resilience of women. Mm-hmm. And I think that this year we're going to have to drive the vote in ways that we have not considered before.
Yeah.
White women, black women, Latino women, Asian women. We're the majority of this country, and yet we have the least rights. Mm-hmm. It's not fair, it's not right, and we have the power.
Laura, talk more about the urgency in this moment. How do you see it?
Gosh, there's so many things that my mother, my grandmother, who was a suffragette, they worked so hard to get us to where we are. And now you look at our bodily autonomy. I mean, look at what this administration is taking away from us. You know, we had rights to our own bodies, rights to have children, not have children, rights to education. I was working with a young student at North Central College out in Naperville who was applying to continue on a master's program in women's studies. Do you know that you cannot use the word woman when you're applying for federal funds, but you can use the word man?
I had no idea.
I know there's a whole list of words that you can't use when you're applying for federal funding. Mm. You look at our right to vote. You know, what's going on with the redistricting in all of those states? You're looking at people not seeing themselves represented in Congress anymore. And then you look at the SAVE Act, and a lot of people think that it's a good thing because it's keeping those that aren't American citizens from voting.
Mm-hmm.
But even the Heritage Society said that in over the last 10 years, there's only been about 70 people who are not American citizens voting. What it will do, it will disenfranchise about 69 million women whose names don't match their birth certificate. In other words, women who got married and changed their names. And you take it deeper, what happens? Because all of these things are interrelated.
Yes.
There are people, apparently, if you have a passport or you have a marriage or a divorce certificate, if you don't have those, you can't vote. You can't register to vote. So take it a step further. If you live in a rural community, how do you physically get there to get a passport? If you can't afford to travel, I doubt you can afford to have a passport at $165 mm-hmm. that you have to get to the place where you can get the passport. So you look at the inability to travel because you have children, because you don't have daycare, because you can't afford to get there, because you don't live in a place where there's access to public transportation.
Right.
There's so many things that cross so many lines that will keep us from being human.
Mm-hmm. Yet, Maureen, as you alluded to mm-hmm. earlier, Illinois has an interesting history with this fight, with the ERA, on both sides of it. Tell us more. What
Absolutely.
Should we know?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, women who, like Alice Paul, who promoted the Equal Rights Amendment in 1923, it tells you something when there another 50 years goes by before Congress officially passes it, that the threat that I think is perceived, that why people don't want us to have that amendment pass,
mm-hmm.
because they assume that will give us more impact. Not that lack of laws or amendments have kept women from doing that. Anyway, but once in a while, it's nice to be affirmed by your own government that you're doing what needs to be done. And that's the problem. We got down to the 38th state in the ratification process. That was Virginia, right after Illinois.
Right.
And but the ratification has to be certified by the National Archivist, of all things. You know, who invents that kind of procedure? And the National Archivist, guess who that is right now? Marco Rubio. And so is he going to sign off on it?
No.
Hell no.
No.
You know, because we know who he works for. So there we sit again. You know, 50 years goes by, and then another 50 years goes by, and here we still are.
Yeah. Tell us about Phyllis Schlafly.
Well, that was the problem here in Illinois. Mm-hmm. As ERA advocates were pushing to get Illinois to ratify, Phyllis Schlafly, who was a pretty active member of the Republican Party in Illinois. In fact, she talked the Republican convention in 1980 to take a pro-ERA plank out of their convention platform. And they did it because she pushed for it. And so she became a thorn in the side of ERA advocates in Illinois for years. And so, you know, consequently, here we are so late in 2018, finally ratifying, or 2017, finally ratifying.
Right.
The 46 ERA amendment.
Years later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you can see how activists who oppose something can also be effective in doing that.
Right. Reverend Bolson, Jesse Jackson was a champion of the ERA, right? How does Rainbow Push carry on that work today?
Well, I think what we're doing today is trying to get a rainbow coalition of women of all cultures and people of all cultures to begin to work together to fight for our rights. I think this last election, it showed our division. Mm-hmm. Many white women did not vote their interest and their strength. Many other cultures did not vote their strength. And then African Americans did not vote to the level of their power. And what we're saying is we must drive the vote together. We must empower ourselves, and everyone that we vote for must support our issues. It is inconceivable to me that we have a Congress that allowed SNAP benefits to be cut, mm-hmm. Title I to be cut. And so we can no longer sit by and ignore what is happening in this country. And as has already been said, we have to not only register, but we must become educated voters. And together we can turn the country, we the people, in order to form a more perfect union. That's the basis of the Constitution. We are the people, and women are the majority of the people. So if women decide we want ERA, it will be ERA.
Right.
There's no way that these men can get elected without, if we vote against them. And we must understand the power and the strength of our vote. So Rainbow Push is hosting our convention this year. It is looking at the unfulfilled promises that America made to us. And we're inviting women, we're inviting every ethnic group, particularly Native Americans, Asian Americans, Latino Americans. We must come together, look at the issues, and decide how we're going to work together to save not ourselves, but to save our nation.
Tell me more, Laura, about the stakes more than 50 years on from when the ERA was passed by Congress. What are the things that could be influenced today by the ERA? The issues?
Oh, gosh. You name it. My right and my daughter's right to determine her future. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that people really need to think about. You look at my ability and her ability to have a voice. Why is it that all of a sudden we're looking to rescind the 19th Amendment? Who's afraid of us? Who's afraid that women will continue having power? It's the white men that are sitting predominantly in Congress, in Senate, in the White House. They don't want women to have the right to vote. So they're now looking at one family, one vote. Well, who's the head of the family in a lot of places? Mm-hmm. It's the man. So it is really our ability to control our lives and our futures. And that's just, again, a universal. When you look across everything that now works for, whether it's constitutional equality, voting rights, rights to bodily autonomy, LGBTQIA plus rights. I mean, look at that. Who's being harmed by two people of the same sex getting married? Nobody. But they're putting together this world of fear. Mm-hmm. That's what's at stake.
So as we wrap here, I mean, what is next for the Drive the Vote tour? Do you know where the car is?
I do.
Is going next after
yes.
Chicago?
They were staying with me, so I know exactly where they were driving. They are in Indiana today, I believe South Bend, and then they're going up to several places in Michigan. And one of the really fascinating things is they're trying to get mayors to sign on. There's a sign for ERA.org, and they're trying to get 1 million people to sign on to that so that then we can bring it to Congress and
right.
get this discharge petition through Congress so we can get this going
right.
again.
Once again, that website was Sign4ERA, and that's the number four.
Correct.
We'll leave it there. Laura Welch is a National Organization for Women National Board Member, past president of Illinois Now. Reverend Jeanette Wilson is the National Director for Push for Excellence, and Maureen Helwig is the President Emeritus of Chicago Women's History Center. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in up to 40 currencies with only a few simple taps. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. Terms and conditions apply. Be smart. Get Wise. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work.
Now we'll turn to the top stories of the day in our area, from the latest on the approval of a new Chicago Inspector General to the ongoing beef between Governor J.B. Pritzker and his political opponent, Darren Bailey, to a player injury on the Chicago Sky. We sat down with an all-WBEZ lineup, Alex Degman, reporter and anchor, In the Loop senior producer Meha Ahmed, and reporter Summer Van Benten. Today's a busy one at City Hall, so Alex started us off with a breakdown of the top items on the agenda. Here he is.
There are many, but I'm going to choose three.
Okay.
I had to whittle it down a little bit. So first, let's talk about the ordinance to potentially ban police officers from joining extremist groups. This passed out of committee last month. It seems like it's got pretty wide support. And what this does is it prevents cops from engaging in what's called extremist activities, air quotes around that. And that's defined as any attempt to overthrow any level of any U.S. government through violence or unconstitutional means. And the prohibition also applies to planning, execution, material support of hate crimes. So basically, if you do anything involving anything like related to the Proud Boys or the Oath Keepers, anything like that, that's a big no-no.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, we've been hearing a lot about the tipped minimum wage getting phased out. There is something before Alders today that would make that go on a little bit longer. It would take them longer to phase it out. So
okay.
Essentially they want to delay it because some restaurants are like, well, we can't afford this right now. So mm-hmm. it's supposed to be phased out. The tip minimum is by 2028 currently, but this would allow it to be extended until 2028 is when it's supposed to end. This would allow it to be extended to 2030. Did I say that right?
Yes, yes, yes.
All right. It's been a long day already. And then also there's the huge project around United Center. If you've been around there, you've seen there's already dirt moving. The 1901 project, $7 billion, is going to transform the area. But they need to get a tax break from the city first. It's $55 million put forth by Ward 27 Alder Walter Burnett. And this would essentially be what's called a 7B incentive. This lets the property around the United Center be assessed at a lower percentage over what it ordinarily would be to mm-hmm. make it a little bit more affordable. And this type of incentive is only available by the city to projects that probably wouldn't get off the ground, or it would at least be harder to get off the ground if it's in a disincentivized area or economically depressed area. That's what this is for.
And remind us, what exactly is planned for around there?
They've got a lot of stuff.
It's just like another mega entertainment complex sort of deal?
Essentially. I mean, it sounds pretty cool. I mean, I've seen renderings of it. It looks like it's going to be really well done. The first phase includes a music venue, a hotel, and of course, you got to have parking garages. But the parking garages are going to be kind of aesthetically pleasing, I suppose, as much as one can be. And then won't be surface parking lots.
Interesting. Well, we certainly need them here in Chicago. Let's stick with City Hall news, Summer, because there's an ordinance in the name of the late Reverend Jesse Jackson that's making its way through the council. Tell us what that's all about.
Yeah, the ordinance is named after, as you mentioned, the late Reverend Jesse Jackson Sr., who spent much of his life advocating for voting rights and access to ballots. So this would make it illegal to dox election officials with the intent of violence. It would also penalize landlords who don't provide renters with secure mailboxes. Now, Sasha, this just feels a little chaotic. It seems like every day we're waking up to a new voting issue, something that's preventing or, you know, prohibiting someone from voting. And it's getting a bit frustrating, to say the least.
This was a somewhat scaled back version then.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely a scaled back version. And, you know, we keep seeing these ordinances pop up in different cities, different states across the nation, especially with elections coming up. So definitely going to keep our eye on it. It is going to vote in the next cycle. But yeah.
Chicago's one step closer, Meha, to having a new top watchdog for the city. What's the very latest on that?
Yeah. So yesterday, the Chicago City Council's Ethics Committee unanimously approved the nomination of David Glockner. So this was Mayor Brandon Johnson's pick for Inspector General of Chicago. And this is the office that investigates all sorts of happenings and budgets and, you know, does all these investigations in Chicago. And it was a really popular pick for the job. It even got the stamp of approval of a former Inspector General, Joe Ferguson. Someone who, you know, he heads the Civic Federation and hasn't always seen eye to eye with the mayor. But even he was like, oh, this is an amazing pick, because they had worked together previously in the U.S. Attorney's Office. David Glockner himself, as a reminder, is a former assistant U.S. attorney. And he vowed to prioritize problem solving over finger pointing. He, you know, got this ethics approval. It was a key endorsement, and that's going to the full city council today.
Yeah, finger pointing. It sounds like a sort of a light dig to, you know, his predecessor, Deborah Whisberg,
yeah.
Right? And we know that relationship was pretty squishy with her and Mayor Johnson. And what always seems pretty rough about this appointment is typically the mayor appoints the person that he or she wants to be the watchdog who investigates their own city workers and administration.
Yeah, it is.
It is kind of strange.
It's really an interesting dynamic, and this is always a concern for folks when, you know, any mayor picks their own city investigator. But Glockner told the city's ethics committee that, you know, he is committed to objectivity and independence in his work in investigating all levels of city government. And before the ethics committee unanimously backed this nomination, he said he would not have agreed to become the city's chief watchdog if he didn't think Mayor Brandon Johnson was, quote, committed to an effective and independent Inspector General's office. And he even said, you know, the mayor and I have spoken about this, and he gave his assurance, and I accepted that assurance. And if there are times where he thinks, despite his best efforts and the best assurances given, he said, quote, if we find ourselves in a spot where there's not cooperation or there are problems, then you'll hear about it. And that's always the main power of the Inspector General's office, that they will take things to the public.
Seems like he's coming in on the accountability front. Let's hear a little bit more of what Glockner had to say.
I have had very positive, very encouraging conversations with the mayor's administration and with the mayor. I don't expect issues, but I'm also not naive enough to think it's impossible that they could arise.
So today, the full council votes, right? So it seems likely to be confirmed?
If I was a betting person, I feel like that.
You were a betting woman.
Because again, we said, like, this is a really popular pick from Mayor Johnson. But, you know, I never hold anything past the city council. You just never know what's going to happen.
Summer, let's head over to the South Side. Something that I know that you're paying attention to is the extension of the Red Line. And apparently that is something that some South Side neighborhood organizations are looking at, too, as a, sort of a solution to the vacant lots issue in that area. Tell me more.
Definitely. You know, with the extension of the Red Line, a lot of Southsiders are hoping for more foot traffic. They're hoping for more stimulation, economic stimulation. And a couple of groups on the South Side actually this weekend led a run-walk event inviting Peace Runner 773, which, if you know, they're a run club out of the West Side, to the South Side to physically see the vacant lots along the 103rd Street corridor. This is significant because there will also be a 103rd stop along the Red Line.
That's right.
So with the addition of this stop, groups are hoping that not only will people come, but more of those vacant lots will be filled with businesses to contribute and add to the community in that corridor.
Were you there for the event?
I was there for the event.
Did you run?
I came prepared to run. I had my New Balances on.
Okay.
I actually—
The show is not sponsored by New Balance.
No, it's not sponsored, but— it was interesting because not only in addition to the run and the walk, they also had a trolley for people to learn more about Rosemore, Pullman, Roseland, and some of why those lots are vacant and what they're hoping, what they wish to see in those vacant lots. So not only were people moving their bodies and exercising, which as we know, you know, strokes and blood pressure issues run heavily amongst Black communities, but people were also envisioning what those lots could be, grocery stores, gyms, community centers. So it was really beautiful, and the CTA was present, elected officials were present, and it was nice to see true conversations happening about what could be.
Alex, Governor Pritzker, he's slamming his Republican opponent, Darren Bailey. What's that about?
Well, what's it about this time? yeah, you're going to hear a lot of barbs between those two men between now and November. But this time, Governor Pritzker is taking Bailey to task over what Bailey is not saying over the war in Iran. You may have noticed that Darren Bailey is taking a little bit of a softer approach to his support for Trump this time around.
Right.
And Governor Pritzker is not trying to let him do that. He's constantly sending out news releases and constantly basically sending out a campaign pop saying, hey, reminder, Darren Bailey says this, Darren Bailey says that. But now, you know, Pritzker is very wont to call the war in Iran an illegal war, Trump's war, things like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, called Bailey things like a Trump publican and things like that. But he says, you know, hey, Darren, if you really are trying to break from Trump, you know, prove it.
Yeah.
Tell us what you think.
Let's hear from the governor in his own words.
I think it's sad that Darren Bailey is unwilling and unable to stand up and criticize the president's war in Iran, an illegal war, I might add, that he could end if he wanted to. It's causing affordability to go down. It's causing gas prices to have gone up more than $1.50. That's what Darren Bailey is all for.
Any reaction from Bailey's camp?
Bailey's camp did not respond to us specifically.
Mm-hmm.
However, I believe the question somehow got to President Trump. The question got to President Trump as in, are you going to be endorsing in this race? And President Trump said, I don't know what the quote was, but he said, I like Bailey, and kind of, you know, went back to the standard line, Pritzker's a slob, et cetera. So that's what we heard from I guess the Republican side of that.
Yeah. Well, Meha, Illinois is joining half the states in the country in suing the Department of Education. Quickly, what's this fight about?
So Illinois joined 24 states and the District of Columbia to sue the Department of Ed over a new federal rule that is supposed to take effect in July 1st. And you may remember this. We talked about it last year when it happened. This has to do with how the Department of Ed is defining professional degrees and in college and impacting which majors get a certain amount of student loan access. So students—
This is the one that targeted nursing and some other
professions,
right?
Yeah, so students in professional programs like medicine, dentistry, and law could borrow up to $50,000 annually, $200,000 total. But students in other graduate programs could be capped at $20,500, so less than half of that. And per year, and $100,000 overall. And, you know, that was leaving a lot of nurses and physical therapists and other healthcare workers kind of in the lurch. And It made a lot of people panic, wondering how they're going to get student loans and why they were suddenly being, you know, relabeled as not professional degrees.
Yeah.
Attorney General Kwame Raoul of Illinois and other attorneys general say the Trump administration is limiting access to loans in ways that Congress did not intend.
Yeah. Well, Alex, let's pivot here. Tell me some other stories that you're following.
Well, as much as I try, I cannot get the state government bug out of my head. So I'm really following budget negotiations. And specifically this year, I think it's really interesting to watch how the relationship between Governor Pritzker and Mayor Johnson continues to evolve.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of stuff that needs to happen between now and May 31st, not the least of which is a stadium deal. So that's what I'm watching.
And that's not a lot of time either. Now, Summer, you got bad news for Sky fans.
Mm-hmm.
What happened?
It's heartbreaking to say, and my heart goes out, but Chicago Sky forward Rekia Jackson is out for the season in the May 17th game against Minnesota. She tore her ACL.
Oh, dear.
Which, if you have children that play sports, if you have played sports yourself, you know how serious an ACL tear is. It's heartbreaking, and fans are
a big bull for the
it.
Team.
Yeah, definitely is. Jackson has that dog in her, or that lioness in the spirit of the Sky in her. And she's a star player. She's so good on and off the court. So it's definitely heartbreaking to hear.
Mm-hmm. We got happier news, though. We have been looking forward to some things for months.
Yes.
Some festivals.
Since February.
This weekend.
Absolutely.
Where will you be?
I will be at the Forever Mind Festival. I'm so excited. I've been counting down the days and plotting on this again since February. And I can't wait to tune back in to share how the festival went. It's the first ever Forever Mind Festival. So.
Yeah.
Hopefully it'll become a staple.
Remind us who is playing.
Some headliners. How can we forget Keisha Cole,
yep.
Kay Trinata, Monica.
Lloyd.
So hoping that I will have the opportunity to speak with them. They're on my bucket list.
And Meha, you're coming with me, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going.
To Forever Mind.
It's a group effort.
We have to ask the bosses if I can go with you to cover that.
I need the support.
Yes.
So,
you need a producer.
Exactly. I need a producer. We need the support. It's all hands on deck. So
yeah.
I think we should just take a station field trip.
It's a date.
It's a date.
A station field trip. The WBEZ.
WBEZ.
Field trip over to the Forever
Summer
Mind.
Summer Van Benton, Meha Ahmed, and Alex Degman.
This episode of In the Loop was produced by me, Sienna Greaves, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/InTheLoop. Thanks for listening.